Here, I'm going to get awkward here right now.
Awesome.
Okay, you know how Superman it originates from the planet Krypton,
Right.
and but he's on Earth, and he's got on Earth he's got superpowers, but you know, I guess on Krypton he would just be a regular person, or you know, and so that's why when he's on Earth he's got superpowers, but if he gets around kryptonite, he loses all of his
Oh,
abilities, right?
right.
He gets weak. All right. I look at Alabama as Krypton.
Welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vargo, and every episode we get into what has made our guests vulnerable and how they've learned how to own their awkward in order to live their best life. Stay tuned so you can hear every awkward moment in today's show. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Own Your Awkward podcast. I am super excited to have another podcaster from across the globe here today. We've got Mark Reed. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm awake. It's like 1 a.m. here.
Yeah, I appreciate you working with the time difference. It's 9 a.m. here and 1 a.m. there. Where are you for the people who haven't read the bio?
I live in Yamaguchi, Japan, which is I'm in the sticks, or the rice paddies, the rice fields, I guess you could say. I'm in the southern tip of the main island. I used to
Okay.
live in Tokyo, and I've done the urban. I've been an urbanite most of my life, but for the last 4 years, I live out in the sticks.
I love that. It's funny because when I think of the sticks, I think about places in America, and to hear it described in Asia is just a different visual.
Yeah, well, it is different. I mean, like I said, it really is more rice fields than sticks. But you know, I'm surrounded by like mountains. There's a little river behind my house. I mean, you don't get that in Tokyo. Let's put it that way.
Oh, for sure. Well, I actually have been to Tokyo. I studied Japanese in high school for a few years and went to Japan between my junior and senior year.
Nice.
So I can picture that. And wherever there could be a rice paddy, there was.
Yeah. Right, they'll stick them in. Just wait. If there's a little, there's just like an area for a little parking lot. Well, let's just put a little rice field right there.
Yeah, I know. That's what surprised me, was like the little land between the freeway and the exit where you would do, here it would just be, you know, grass or not used for anything, and
Right.
it would be utilized, which was amazing to see. Very
Every
efficient.
inch of land pretty much is utilized in Japan, because 60% of the country is mountainous, and you know,
Right.
you can't use that. So the remaining 40% there, and it's already kind of a crowded country, so they use every part of it.
That's awesome. Well, Mark, we're gonna pick on you in a minute and find out about what your awkward is. But before we get into that, I'd love to hear what you see as the most positive thing. I like to start out asking my guests, what's the most positive thing they see in the world, especially coming from a different area?
Well, yeah, I mean, if we're talking like positive things in Japan versus positive things in America, those would be different answers. But most positive thing in the world, I think, is these days is community building. And what I mean by that is, like, I think this is one of the few positives that came out of the pandemic, because you know, everyone's isolated, you got to stay indoors, so everyone goes online. And there's been a lot of, in the last 2 years or so, just a tremendous amount of community building. People finding groups. I mean, it could be a group of awkward people, you know, that form a group. I'm in a group on through LinkedIn that's called Biz Catalyst, which, you know, it has a lot of creative types, a lot of people who write articles for their website. And I mean, that group has grown. They even had a convention here like a month ago in Tampa, Florida, where they flew from all over the United States and flew down to Tampa and met each other in person. I think community building, that's the most positive thing I see going on in the world these days.
I love that, Mark. And I was in Tampa, and I have to say, for part of that convention, Dennis Patoko, who puts that on, he gathered voices from around the world for people who are part of the community but couldn't make it. And yours was so entertaining and fun. I Dennis is really good about posting things on their YouTube page, so hopefully he has done that. But it's
yeah, he did. Yeah, I didn't realize you were there. Yeah, Dennis had contacted me months before, And he said, "Hey, I need a voice from Asia." And I'm like, so I got to speak on behalf of Asia. So she's like, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it was awesome. So we'll put a link to that in the description here because you guys need to watch it. It was entertaining seeing you kind of through a day in the life or a day in the week of what you could encounter in Japan. It was neat to watch.
Yeah, I wanted to piece together. I didn't want to just stand in front of the camera the whole time. So I thought, well, what could I put together that, you know, show the highlights different, you know, aspects? And so there's one of me standing in front of or one segment where I'm in front of a pagoda. So, you know, kind of architectural thing. And then I'm like in a conveyor belt sushi restaurant. And then yeah. I was at a sumo tournament.
Right.
And then I finished up with kind of the, you know, face in front of the camera thing.
Yeah. And it was fun to watch because not only could we see where you were, but we could get this sense of you kind of trying to not be very disruptive to the environment around you, where you're almost whispering like, and here's another part of my life.
Yeah. Especially it's odd because you would think at a sumo tournament, you can be as loud as you want, but that was like where I really felt I needed to be the quietest.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, no, it was great. I really appreciated your message, and it's great to talk to you in person. You know, even though we couldn't have you there.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah. I love that you bring up community because that's when you were talking about that, I was thinking about the 360 encounter in Tampa and just how that community has come together. And like you said, there are communities like that where people are finding like-minded people. And as much as social media makes us feel like the world is falling apart, it's actually bringing people closer together in a lot of ways for that support.
Right. I totally agree.
Yeah. So, Mark, in a little bit, we're gonna find out more about what you do because I really want to highlight that as well. But before we do that, what is your awkward thing that you have had to own?
Well, I think mine is sort of obvious. I'm a Japanophile. That is actually a word, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, I'm sort of. You know, the Japanese word for it would be otaku. Like I'm sort of a nerd about Japanese stuff. And so I, you know, I like it all, almost everything. I don't like everything. I don't care about anime or manga, that kind of thing. I don't care about video games, but the food, the culture, you know, kimonos, chopsticks, taking your shoes off when you come in. I mean, just the whole gamut. I just love, you know, Japan. I can't explain it.
Wow. So now, just curious because for the people who are listening, you know, Mark's a white guy in Asia. He's
from Alabama. Yeah.
From Alabama. Okay. That's why I was going to ask, like, were you somehow raised in Japan? Are you actually from Alabama?
Oh yeah. I mean, okay. You can't hear it in my accent. The long story short of how the Japanophile thing came to be, cause I didn't know anything about Japan growing up. And, but I was into the first little introduction. I got into martial arts, you know, as kids, as like teenagers do. And the one that was available to me was Aikido and Judo. And so I'm studying Aikido and Judo, and I got pretty good at it. I got a first degree black belt, and I can't do that stuff anymore. But when you're practicing and you're doing your reps, for whatever reason, we count in Japanese instead of English. So it was ichi ni san chi go do shi, you know, counting in Japanese. But that's all I could do. And then I get to college. I went to the University of Alabama, and you know, it's a big school. You can minor in Swahili if you wanted to, but so Japanese is on the menu, and I minored in Japanese. But it was silly because all I could do was count to 10, and I knew konnichiwa right. or something. You know,
so
that was it.
You entered college with only the counting aspect as your language knowledge.
And only did 10, even at that point. I couldn't even count to 20. but you know, I was interested. The martial art thing was the segue, you know, the mm-hmm. watching the Karate Kid in the 80s, you know, that got me interested in going to Japan it got me interested in studying more about Japan. Mm-hmm. And then studying the language, you know, when you minor in it, you know, you got to learn how to write kanji, you know, so you're learning how to write these like complex Japanese characters. And, you know, you feel kind of cool because you're like, right. man, I'm writing, you know, I'm writing this stuff that nobody else can read unless you're Japanese. And I don't know. It just started and you know, it just ballooned from there. I just kept, you know, I had never even tried sushi until I got to college. And
you must have liked it.
Well, the funny thing about that, talk about an awkward moment. So I was a member of like the Japan Appreciation Society or whatever it was called at college in Alabama. And they had a sushi party and I brought my friend and I said, hey, let's go try sushi. Neither one of us had. And so we go and they have the wide variety of everything, maki rolls, nigiri, all of it. And I was adventurous and I'm like, I want to try the first one I want to try. It's called uni, which is sea urchin. It is the most disgusting thing.
Oh, no. Yes.
It's the one sushi I don't eat these days. Yeah, and I'll eat everything else, but I won't eat uni. But it was the first one I
sushi
tried.
Yeah, there is a wide variety of flavors within the sushi family. And there's some that I love and would have, and some where I'm just like, if that was my sushi experience, I would never eat it again.
I almost gave up before I got started, but fortunately I had, you know, I kept going, but oh my goodness, don't try uni.
So I'm curious. So you've shared a little bit about, you know, how you got into this and how you started your love of being a Japanophile, which is, I appreciate hearing that word because I've never heard that before. And I'm going to make that a positive word in my head. Because anytime something has file at the end, it doesn't sound right.
Right.
But a Japanophile. So how was that received, like with your friends and family, as you started to really embrace that? Did you get pushback? Was it like, oh?
Well, it wasn't serious pushback other than just like, oh, Mark's a weirdo. You know, Mark's a weirdo about Japan. Mm-hmm. I've only gotten one kind of serious pushback. And it's years later. It's like after this is my third time to live here. And I got in touch with an old high school friend, and we're not going to talk politics, but she's on the right wing side of things. And so, you know, she sort of got critical about the fact that I want to live here versus America. And it's not that I don't want to live in America. I just enjoy my life here in Japan.
Sure.
And that was the biggest pushback I got, was that she thought that I was wrong or
that it was
not
hate for the country.
That I was not patriotic or something. Yeah.
I think that that's a hard thing for people to understand when they're not open about experiences, that you choosing to go have another experience and live in another country is not hate for your own country.
Not at all. Zero. I still vote. I'm a U.S. citizen. I'll be a U.S. citizen for the rest of my life, you know. So it's just, you know, this is my life and this is where I want to live it.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. I've seen those questions where it's like, if you could live anywhere in the world, you know, for a year or whatever, where would you go? And I don't have that thing that comes right to mind where I say I'd go here, I'd go there. There's a lot of places I want to see, but as far as like a place, I just don't have that in my head. So I really respect that you found somewhere that you want to be. did you notice a difference as you became more and more embraced or ingrained in Japan? Because you said you were in the urban environment and then you moved out to the sticks. How did that change? Did that affect your situation?
Well, I think the timing was right. You know, I have been an urbanite all of my life. I mean, even growing up in Alabama, I grew up in Birmingham, which is a little more cosmopolitan and metropolitan than people that aren't familiar or, you know, it's a little more progressive than people imagine it to be.
Sure.
And then, you know, after Birmingham, I mean, I've lived in Los Angeles. I lived in London. I've lived in West Palm Beach, Florida, which is kind of like North Miami. I've lived in Seoul, South Korea. I've lived in Tokyo. You know, I have been an urbanite all my life, and I'm in my mid-40s, and I don't look at it as like a midlife crisis or anything. I just look at it as midlife development. I've had enough big cities. I still like to go visit big cities, but I was sort of ready to just adjust for the second half of my life to, you know, go be a farm boy in Japan.
Right. How do the locals accept that?
Well, Japan's a very friendly country. But there's no question that I stand out. Sure. I don't look Japanese. Uh-huh. And I live in an area, you know, if you're in Tokyo, you wouldn't get a second glance because there's plenty of foreigners there. You know, Tokyo's like a, you know, New York City in East Asia. But I live somewhere where there's only one other foreigner in, you know, within a several mile radius of where I live. Like, okay. It's, yeah. So I stick out, I stand out. But the locals, they welcome me, you know. I mean, there's always an element in Japan of I'm a gaijin, which means, right, which literally means outsider, but they don't use it in a pejorative way. I mean, it just, I'm a gaijin or gaikokujin, which means I've come from a foreign country. But they're very welcoming, very friendly. They, you know, I speak enough Japanese that I can have a conversation. So they're kind of excited, mm-hmm, to have a conversation with me. So sure. It's nice. Yeah.
Well, I think that's, you know, when we look at owning our awkward and seeing things that are different, you know, we can either use that to feel like we are that gaijin in a prerogative way that's pushed aside. That's like, oh, I'm the outsider, or I'm an exciting difference that I'm bringing to the community that some of the people here may not have traveled or may not meet someone like me. And so I need to be the best representative of what a different person could be.
Oh yeah. You have to own your awkward. If you're going to live in rural Japan, you better own your awkward, because it's there.
Now, when you started to like really embrace this and make that difference, where you said, I'm moving there, and clearly you've lived all over the world, so this isn't necessarily, you know, you maybe you even experienced this somewhere before Japan. How did that feel to yourself? Did you notice like a difference in your vibe, your energy, or your how you were reacting to things?
That's a great question. Yes, and I'm trying to conceptualize how you know, in what way. I used to joke about that. Here, I'm going to get awkward here right now. Okay, so
awesome.
Yeah. So, you know how Superman originates from the planet Krypton.
Right.
But he's on Earth, and he's got superpowers. But, you know, I guess on Krypton, he would just be a regular person, or, you know. And so that's why when he's on Earth, he's got superpowers. But if he gets around Kryptonite, he loses all of his abilities. Oh, right? Right. He gets weak. All right. I look at Alabama as Krypton. And so like when I'm there, I have no superpowers. And what I mean by that is like, I sound like, you know, my accent's just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. I'm just a white guy in Alabama, you know, like, so, you know, the ladies have no reason to like me in Alabama.
Right.
But if I'm in Japan, I kind of have a superpower. I'm this white guy from Alabama. I have a, you know, even I'm married now, so I'm out of the dating pool. But when I was here before and in the dating pool, not just would say Japanese women, but like other foreign women that like from England, like New Zealand, other English teachers, you know, they were kind of drawn to this guy from Alabama, and because he sounded different, and you know,
sure.
So I guess to address your question, yeah, I mean, living in that sort of scenario, it certainly changed my vibe and made me more confident, more chill in a way. So yeah, does that answer your question?
No, that really does. And actually, I love the way you described that with the Kryptonite, because I talk to people all the time about how owning your awkward turns your insecurity into your superpower. And I use some examples from Superman, but I haven't used it, you know, the Clark Kent versus Superman. You got to like at some point get in the phone booth and change. But I had not ever considered the idea of the kryptonite. And I love that because it's really true. Like once we're back in our element that we're comfortable in, we're just like everybody else and we don't have anything that really makes us stand out. But then once we have that difference, now all of a sudden it's like, wow, I've got my cape on.
Right.
Why I stand out.
Yeah, pretty much.
Did you ever have moments where you took that the other way where you stood out and it didn't feel good? Because I know that's the way a lot of people go.
Well, not intentionally, but, there is this sort of stereotype of if you really have a strong Southern accent, you sound uneducated. And so there have been a few moments where people have picked on me a little bit because of the accent. And in fact, the first time I came to Japan, which was 25 years ago, 1997, it was my first job out of college. My accent was much stronger. And I was super self-conscious of it because of the stereotype of not or being less educated or whatever, or just branding me a conservative without even asking my political views. And so I over enunciated every single syllable of every word that I pronounced. You know, I aimed for like the newscaster pronunciation.
Right.
Just a standard American.
Exhausting.
It was totally exhausting, but it did at least temper down my Southern drawl just a little bit.
Yeah. I have a friend who works in the medical field very, well established as a boss where he's at. He speaks at conventions and things, but he has a very strong Southern accent. And sometimes he'll talk to somebody, in the happy hour setting or something, and they treat him like he's just, ignorant or doesn't know things. And he's like, what are you talking about? I have a PhD. I know more about these things than you probably will ever know. And yet you're making this assumption, telling me that I'm the one making assumptions.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't need to keep bringing up politics. It was my major. So it's like, it comes out, but, there was a senator from Alabama named Hal Heflin. And I don't agree with his politics. I'm on the other side of that spectrum. However, when he spoke, he was extremely eloquent. He was a great orator. But he had the strongest Southern accent. Like you would have to, and so it was distracting to the eloquence because you would just hear the accent and you're like, oh, this guy's a moron. But if you like just read the transcript, you're like, wow, this guy's a genius. You know, so the accent can be, well, not a genius, but he was right. Very eloquent in the way he presented his points sometimes. And but that accent, it would just throw you off. And so,
yeah,
anyway, I've had to deal with that in my life.
I bet. I heard a story on NPR one time years ago about comparing the transcripts of Bill Clinton's speeches and then the younger George Bush's speeches. And they were saying, George Bush had this, reputation of not delivering as good of a speech. But if you actually read the transcript, they were saying his speechwriters actually wrote better speeches than what Clinton's speechwriter wrote. Clinton was so much better at the oration of it.
Delivery.
That it would come out right. And Bush would just, land on the wrong word at the wrong time and it would ruin the point of the speech. And it really goes to show how much it doesn't matter what you're saying if you're not saying it in a way that people are receiving it. And sometimes that's not right. Like sometimes people are reading too much into the way things are delivered and not paying attention to the words we're saying or the meaning behind them.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm in my mid-40s and I've got a bunch of degrees to hang on. I actually don't hang them on the wall. They're just sitting in a drawer. But, I've got 3 degrees. I don't care. I've got a thick skin. So if somebody came along and made fun of me for my accent, I would just laugh it off these days.
Right.
I own that awkward as well.
I love that. I think something that you just mentioned there is like you have all these degrees now. You have all this life experience because you're, further along in life than when you first got out of college and were in Alabama. And have you experienced where you've noticed, was there a point where you first noticed that you weren't having to fight for that attention anymore or fight for that status?
Like a turning point, like a pivot? Pivotal moment. I don't know. Maybe around 2003. That's the year I spent in South Korea,
Okay.
and I was still, let's see, 2003. I was probably, I think I was like 27, something like that. But I worked at a school, and everyone was from New Zealand except me, and there was one other woman from Canada. But I was suddenly older. I had this. I have this life experience where I was always the youngest person in the room for like the longest time, and then I turned 27, and I suddenly was the oldest person in the room all the time.
From one extreme to the other.
Yes, I was never just like in the mix, and so it was in that year that I was like the oldest one there. So even with my southern accent, well, they're Kiwis, they're from New Zealand, so they have a little bit of self-consciousness too, because it's a little country. Actually, the population of New Zealand is about the same as Alabama. It's about like 4 million or 5 million people. Yeah, and there's more sheep in New Zealand than there are people, and so they're a little bit self-conscious. They're not like the Australians. I think a lot of people that don't really know these little cultural differences, they just think of Australia and New Zealand as the same thing. Not at all. It's Australians are kind of like Americans. They're brash, they're loud, and they're in your face. And New Zealanders are more like Canadians. They're real quiet and subtle. And so anyway, in that, I think that year was the turning point where they sort of looked to me, because I was a little older. I'd already had teaching experience. It was their first year teaching. And so suddenly, I was in a kind of position of credibility. So.
And it's interesting. I think sometimes we stumble into our credibility. Like, even though you had the degrees, you had the experience, I don't know, for you, were there the first couple of years where, even though you're armed with that stuff, did you feel like you knew what you were doing immediately?
Well, I had already taught English by that time. I had taught in Japan, and I had been by that time I had been a graduate teaching assistant at Florida State, and so I had taught like large class. Well, I was a TA of, it was a class of 200, so like in an auditorium, and then the class would break up into smaller groups of 20, and I had like two sections of 20 students, but these are like college age students in America. And I had, of course I was nervous when I started, but over after, 2 years of that, you get accustomed to it. And I worked my way through the nerves. So after having had that experience, then going to Korea and going back to teaching English, it was kind of a piece of cake.
And that is the thing. I think, like you said, we work through those nerves, and then it's just like working any muscle. Then when you step on the next stage, you step in front of the next group, and you're just prepared.
That's it.
So tell us about Zen Samich.
Yeah. That's my podcast, and I've been doing it for 2 years now. I just not too long ago passed 100 episodes, and it started as a blog, actually. What had happened is about 2 years ago, a little more than 2 years ago, I was asked to contribute to another blog, another website, and to contribute two articles. So I wrote up two articles, and they published them. And then I, started exploring that blog, and I was like, I can do a better job than this. So I thought, I'm going to start. Yeah. So I thought, I'm going to start my own blog, and I'm going to create my own website. And again, this is like when I went to college, and the only thing I could do was count to 10 in Japanese. And suddenly I'm going to study Japanese. I didn't know anything about creating a website or any of that stuff. I had to learn all of that stuff from scratch. But I thought, I can do better than this. So Zen Samich started as a blog, and I would write articles. I would try to get other people to contribute articles, and I put that together. But then, and so, and then the first thought I had was, I'm going to create a podcast to supplement the blog. So in other words, I'll create a podcast, and on the podcast, I'll say, hey, go check out the blog, zensandwich.com. But what happened was the podcast took over. The podcast, you know, blew up. I'm not Joe Rogan or anything, but the podcast got a lot more popular than the blog. I got a lot more downloads on my podcast than I got visitors to the website. So I thought, well, forget this blog stuff. I'm doing a podcast now. Mm-hmm. So I changed it, you know, and my focus is now, you know, 99% on the podcast, 1% on the blog side.
Right. So what are the typical things you're talking about on there and people you're having on?
Yeah, I get asked sometimes, like, why the name Zen Sandwich? And I think when I explain that, that'll kind of give you the answer to the question you're asking. I do focus on Zen philosophy. It's not a religion. It's a way of thinking. You can be a Christian and study Zen and you're fine in your faith. You can be an atheist and study Zen and you're fine in your lack of faith, whatever. I do talk about Zen topics, especially if I do a solo episode where it's just me talking. But even the people I interview, I will work it in towards the end. I do a little segment called 5 Minute Zen. And it doesn't matter if I'm talking to an artist, a photographer, an entrepreneur or whatever. I kind of find a way to work it in. However, the sandwich part is so that people don't. It has two purposes, really. Well, there's three purposes. One, so people don't take it too seriously, because I'm all over the place. But I'm going to put this together if you follow me for a second. You know Gandhi, the famous quote, "Be the change you want to see in the world."
Yeah.
So every Zen podcast that I've ever gone to was just boring as crap. It would put you into a meditative sleep just listening to it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, let's put the fun back in Zen. So I'm trying to be the change I want to see in the world. I'm creating a Zen podcast, but I'm also being realistic, practical, interviewing a wide variety of people, not just Zen monks or whatever.
Right.
So that's the sandwich part. It's fun. The other purpose was it's an easy name to remember. I don't have a competitor, right? You're not going to, you know, there's nobody else that has a podcast that sounds like Zen Sandwich. So if you type in Zen Sandwich, I'm the only one that pops up on Google or wherever. I've forgotten the third purpose I was going to throw out there. But, you know, the idea is, yes, it's a little bit of Zen, but it's also a lot of sandwich. It's a wide variety of, I look for one of two people, and if I get a combo, it's a big score. I look for someone that either is an expert in something or someone who has an interesting story. And, you know, and those are two different things. I mean, somebody could be an expert in something and not really have an interesting personal story. And then, you know, somebody can, you know, have a amazing personal story, but they're not an expert in anything. And then occasionally you get the someone who's got both, and that's, you know, that's a winner episode right there.
Right. I love that. It's there is a trick to finding just the right guests where, you know, I'll have people on and it's like, this is great, but if we don't get into the fun stuff, then it's like, okay, you're a great person and I enjoy talking to you. But like, if we don't get into these moments where the lights come on, like you're talking about Superman and Kryptonite, and you're like, right, it's going to get really awkward. I'm like, yes, this is going to be so much, so much more interesting. Yeah. So I know what you mean. One thing that you touched on there, you referred to it and you referred back to, you know, only knowing how to count to 10 in Japanese, was that both times you had there's this theme of, I'm going to do this thing, but I don't even know barely past the first step, if even the full first step fully. Yet you still decided to jump in and go for it. What got you through the beginning of both of those?
Oh, man. Well, through both, like, the studying Japanese and then the later on developing a podcast?
Yeah, just knowing that you could do this thing that you are going to have to learn every step of the way. Was there something underlying there that got you to the end?
You know, not to psychoanalyze it too much, but I think growing up in Alabama where you know, and I don't mean to be critical or overly critical, but it's sort of a one-dimensional place. But I always had, you know, an adventurer's heart, an adventurer's mind. Like I loved maps when I was a kid, you know, but I never went anywhere outside of Alabama. for the first 21 years of my life, the only, we'd vacation in the panhandle of Florida, or we'd go over to Six Flags in Atlanta. That was it. Those were my international experiences.
Right.
And so for 20 something years, you know, I'm stuck in Alabama and I'm looking at maps. I'm watching National Geographic or something, you know, and I'm seeing like all these interesting places around the world. And I just had always had an adventurer's spirit. So that, you know, kind of explains why I was willing to, like, I didn't want to go to college and study Spanish. I'd studied Spanish in high school, but I get to college. And I'm like, I can study Japanese. Awesome. Let's do it.
Right.
And, you know, that's just snowballed. You know, it just, so I'm willing to take on something. So I knew when I started a podcast that, or when I started the website, like, okay, I don't know anything about, you know, web design. And I started with like one of those like kind of easy, bit like Wix.com or something, you know, where you just drag and drop and build your website that way. And I thought, I feel kind of limited with that. So then I wiped that clean and I went to YouTube. I'm like, okay, how do I build a website? And there's tons of videos, and you just, you know, it takes devotion. It takes hours of study because there's a lot of crap there too, where you're watching YouTube and you're like, this isn't very helpful. So then you gotta go find something else. But then eventually you find that golden nugget and you're like, ah, this is teaching me step by step. So I would watch like 10 seconds and I'd go do the thing. And then I'd watch 10 more seconds and I'd go do the thing, you know, built it, you know, just built it from nothing.
Yeah. I'm laughing because I have some videos saved in my favorites that I keep rewatching to go back and watch the next 10 seconds, because, you know, you can only learn so much and then you got to apply it. And, or sometimes there'll be video editing or things where I haven't done that for a while and I got to go rewatch that video.
Yeah. Same here.
Yeah. Yep. So I can relate to that. Well, Mark, what is the best way for people to support you and get behind what you're doing?
Well, just give, first listen to On Your Awkward, of course. And then when you've listened to all of the On Your Awkward episodes, if you still got a little podcast thirst left in you, go give Zen Sandwich a try. You can find it at zensandwich.com, or you can just, I mean, like I said, it's a pretty unique name. You can just go to wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, and just type in Zen Sandwich, and I'll be there.
It's going to pop right
so
up.
So just give it a try.
That's awesome. And it sounds both fun and fun, inspiring, and educational all at once.
You just said it. That's what I'm aiming for.
There we go. Well, you described it well then, because I picked up on it.
Great.
Well, before we hit the road here, I just got to ask you one last thing. What would you give people for advice on how they can own their awkward?
To be present in the moment when you own your awkward, you know, to actually practice becoming comfortable with feeling uncomfortable. And in fact, you can turn that into something you look forward to. You really can, through your mindset. And, you know, I mean, the name of your show, it says it, Own Your Awkward. And my advice would be to be present in that moment. You know, nothing is permanent. Everything is always changing. Instead of dwelling on the past awkward moments or worried about future awkward moments, embrace the current awkward moment and relish it and enjoy it and be in the present.
Wow. That's beautiful. I love that, that statement that you made just about becoming comfortable with being uncomfortable. It kind of changes the narrative around it. And it really makes, like, when I think about that, it makes me not feel like a victim so much. Like, oh, I'm going to experience this thing and I'm not going to like that, but I'm just going to have to get through it. It's like, no, I'm going to get excited about that because I know I'm going to learn something new, or something really awesome is going to come out of this uncomfortable experience.
Yes, that's it. You might be a Zen master, Andy.
I'm learning. I'm going to study up on the Zen sandwich and have some fun while I'm learning more.
There you go.
Well, Mark, it's been a pleasure to chat with you, and I really appreciate you staying up late or staying up early into the early morning to do this. I know it's it's fun balancing across the globe, but I love having voices from more than just you know, my backyard. So
right. Well, thank you for the opportunity. It's great to be here.
Thank you. And everybody else, be sure to go out, follow Zen Samich, and of course, own your awkward. Thank you so much for listening in for today's show. Be sure to visit awkwardcareer.com to continue your journey. And of course, please like, subscribe, and share with your friends so they can find their awkward side and learn how to own it.